Hi, and thanks for downloading the PT Pintcast, a podcast for DPT students and new grads created entirely by PT students. The twist is, we want a candid and casual conversation instead of a lecture. Because let's be honest, we get more than enough lectures during school. So to keep things a bit lighter, we like to throw in a beer, glass of wine, or mixed drink, just to make sure people are a little more relaxed. My name is Jimmy McKay, a third-year student at Marymount University in Arlington, Virginia, and I'll be your host as we have some drinks and talk PT with clinicians, researchers, and leaders in the field of physical therapy. So feel free to crack a beer while you listen, because the more you drink, the smarter I sound.
This is the PT Pintcast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer, bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
Next episode of the PT Pintcast. Glad to have you here. Make sure you can share us online, subscribe, and the biggest way to help us out is tell a friend. Today on the Pintcast, Karen Litzy on Twitter at Karen Litzy NYC. She's a DPT and also a host of a podcast, Healthy, Wealthy, and Smart. You can check her out online. She is available on iTunes everywhere, and she's done more than 150 episodes. And today we're going to talk a little pain. Karen, welcome to the Pintcast.
Hi, well, thank you for having me.
So we chatted a couple times earlier about pain. And that seems to be kind of your area of expertise. And I know you had some experience with pain in the past. And then it led you to somebody, caused you to look at pain kind of differently. And that made all the difference. Who was that person and what happened?
I had had kind of chronic neck pain for many years. I can't really remember how many at this point. I'm going to say at least five, but I don't know. It's sort of a distant memory right now. But in 2011, I went to one of the next conferences, and Dr. David Butler, who is an Australian physical therapist and researcher, was speaking. And my friend Erica Mello, who's also a PT here in New York City, said, "Oh, you got to come here and speak. You got to come here and speak." So I went and I heard him speak, and everything that he was saying about pain was exactly what I was feeling. And not just the physical, but the emotional part of it and the social part of it. And once I heard him speak, he was going up to New York City the next day, as was I. And so I was able to sit with him for a couple of hours and talk pain with him. And he's just been an incredible mentor and an educator for me, and it made all the difference in my personal pain experience.
So let's rewind. You were having the pain for a couple of years. I'm imagining since you're a PT, you were trying out a bunch of different standard treatments, and nothing's working, or what's happening?
That's right. Nothing was working. So I had neck pain. I woke up one morning and I couldn't move, couldn't get out of bed, couldn't lift myself up out of bed. I had to roll off my bed onto the ground. And then it felt like my head weighed 500 pounds and I had to actually put my hands around my neck just to support my head, because it felt like it was just going to wobble right off my body. It, obviously a little traumatic. And then the pain got a little bit better, and then I would have these exacerbations. And then it came to the point where It was literally every day I would wake up with some degree of pain. Maybe not the worst pain I've ever felt, but some degree of pain.
Right.
And that went on for a long time. And then the pain, quote unquote, spread. So it was like from the base of my skull to my mid back, down my arms. I had epidural shots, which helped. One of them helped. I tried manual therapy and physical therapy, and that just made everything a lot worse.
Wow.
Too centrally sensitized. So I needed something else. And then when I went to hear David Butler speak, that is what I needed. Was he and Lorimer Mosley wrote a book called Explain Pain. The second edition is out now. And reading that and listening to him and having him kind of help me walk through the steps, that is what took down probably 90% of my pain.
So as a DPT student now, we had talked previous about where pain education is in the curriculum, and I think it's taught at a pretty basic level. But what are we missing about pain that I should take away as a PT student who's going to be a PT in about a year?
I can't say what individual curriculums are teaching, but I think what certainly should be included, and some schools are doing this, what should be included is sort of the neuroscience behind pain and that shift from a strictly biomedical view of our patients to more of a biopsychosocial view of our patients. And that means that just because someone has pain, that doesn't mean that they have tissue damage. So not everyone needs to be poked and prodded and popped and stretched. A lot of people do, and it's really helpful. But sometimes people need to understand what's going on. They need to understand their pain a little bit better. And the work of Dr. David Butler, Dr. Lorimer Mosley, they wrote this book, Explain Pain. They have another book called The Protectometer Handbook. Those are some great resources for people who want to learn a little bit more about pain and about the neuroscience behind pain. The majority of people that we see come to us because they're in pain, so it only makes sense to learn about pain.
Well, let's get to something specific. What kind of approach worked for you since you were in pain for so long? Typical PT actually made things worse. So what actually worked for you?
What worked for me was really understanding the neuroscience behind pain, understanding that I personally wasn't making things worse, meaning, you know, I always thought, oh, I did this to myself, I did that to myself. And sometimes when you have chronic pain, sometimes you have a flare-up and it's not something that you did to yourself. So taking away some of that blame for your pain for me was a really big deal. And just learning how the nerves work and learning that nociception is not necessary for a pain experience and knowing that I wasn't doing further damage to my tissues, that my problem was I had an extra sensitive nervous system. And so there are a lot of things that you can do to help decrease the sensitivity of that nervous system. And that is what worked for me. So for me, just learning the neuroscience behind pain took it down immensely.
You're saying just the knowledge of knowing more about your pain system helped.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And there are studies that show that just learning as a patient, learning, getting more knowledge about pain does help to take your pain levels down. So for me, that was very, very helpful.
Well, that's amazing. Is that pretty much what's explained in Explain Pain that you're saying from Dr. Mosley in that book? Is kind of an approach to explaining how the system works, and the goal would be to reduce pain just by knowledge?
Yeah, and I mean, I think Explain Pain is a good start, and there's more and more research coming out all the time. Another great resource for people is there's a group of books by Louis Gifford called Aches and Pains. And that's, I actually just got those books this past weekend. And that's another great read if you want to learn more about the neuroscience behind pain. You call it Explain Pain, you call it Therapeutic Neuroscience Education or TNE. I think those are just different words for the same thing. And it's just giving your patient the right information, and that can make all the difference. Once those pain levels can come down, and once that patient's fear and anxiety and catastrophization can come down, then you can start working on movement. That's what we do, right? We're movement experts.
Right.
So then we can start working on movement and getting them moving and getting them through their day and getting them to do things that make them happy and make them fulfilled and live a more meaningful life, because it's hard to get through life every day when you're in pain every day.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you explained earlier with your case, you couldn't get out of bed without, you know, holding your head up with your hands. And that's a loss of a lot of function. That's a loss of a big part of your life.
You know, you maybe want to do things with your friends, but you're like, oh, I can't, you know, my neck is killing me, or I couldn't go to work on some days. So I couldn't even help my own patients. And so you start, your self-worth starts to go down a little bit. And these are all things that when you're the therapist and you have someone coming in, and not with acute pain, but with chronic pain, like if I came in to see someone, I said, you know, I've had pain for about 4 years and I have trouble moving my neck. I have trouble carrying things. I can't really use my left hand. Instead of only focusing on the physical part, the biomedical part, which is certainly important, no doubt about it, you have to kind of dig a little deeper to see, because you can, let's say I came in and you gave me exercises, but I'm so scared to move, I'm not going to do them.
Right.
So what good is that?
I'm wasting your time, you're wasting my time, and neither of us, you know, are improving your function.
Right, right. So you have to kind of think about what else is going on. Like, what do you want to do? One question that I always ask patients that I think is really important when you're dealing with someone is in pain is asking them, well, what do you think is going on? And that's a great way to get some insight into their psyche and what they think is going on. Sometimes you'll hear people say, I don't know, I've been to 7 doctors, nobody knows. I don't know what's going on, and I don't really know how to feel about it. That's scary to not know what's going on with your own body. So then you have to think to yourself, okay, this person probably does have a lot of fear avoidance behaviors, meaning they're not doing things because they're afraid it's going to hurt them. And
right.
So you get withdrawal, you get social withdrawal, and it's not a fun place to be. So if we can do things to educate them and decrease the fear around their diagnosis, decrease the sensitivity of their nervous system and get them moving again, and it takes time. There's no quick fix here. For me, it probably took a year to feel good most of the time. I had a drastic drop in about 2 months, but it takes time. And I think for me, it's the win is when I get up in the morning and I don't have pain, which is pretty much every morning. I mean, it's rare that now that I get up with pain. But when I first started to feel that drop in pain and that drop in sensitivity, I would get up in the morning and be like, okay, this is weird, but I don't have pain. I guess this is a good thing. And so it kind of even takes a little bit of time because you identify yourself as being someone in pain. So it kind of takes time for you to start to identify yourself as someone who doesn't have pain.
When they say living with pain, it's almost like the pain actually exists. It's a part of your life. You carry it around. And now you got to kind of remember what it was like to not have to deal with it every day.
Yeah, yeah. And so now I would sort of, you know, keep a journal and say, look at this was 10 days in a row. I woke up and didn't have pain. And so that's a great reinforcement tool. And I do that with my patients with chronic pain as well. It's not a big deal. Just say, when you got up, did you have pain? Yes or no? You don't need to rate it. You don't need to, but just tell me, do you have pain? And then they can look, because they might come into you on a day when they have a lot of pain and say, well, let's check out your journal and say, well, look, you had 7 days without pain. And they're like, oh yeah.
And that's progress.
Yeah, that's a good thing. That's progress, because I used to wake up every day with pain.
That's great. Well, the book that you're referencing, I just want to make sure everybody knows, it is David Butler, Explain Pain. It is available on Amazon. You can grab that right now. And I'm looking at the second edition. Looks like the Explain Pain Handbook is also available. Came out a couple of years after that.
Right. The Explain Pain Handbook just came out this year. And that was David Butler, Lorimer Moseley. It took them many, many years to write that. And that is something that's really designed for use by the patient. So you can kind of go through it. It's like a workbook, like any other kind of workbook. So it's designed for you to go through it with your patient. And I think something to remember here is that nobody is saying, because you're explaining pain to someone, that you're not treating them, that you're not putting your hands on them, that you're not teaching them exercise, or you're not teaching them movement patterns, because you certainly are. It's just one more piece of the puzzle. You know, no one patient does well with just one thing, at least most don't.
Right. I think that's a good takeaway for DPT students. I mean, I'm just speaking for myself as a second year student. I remember my first couple days in my first clinical affiliation, I just wanted to start doing the thing I knew because, you know, it's the first couple patients that you're seeing. You just wanted to get right into it. Just start mobilizing, just start moving, just start stretching. But explaining and understanding really should be the first step for you. And from what I'm taking away from what you're explaining is also the patient. They need to know what's going on.
Of course, it's their body. It's not your body. So they need to know. And the other important thing there is for DPT students, like you said, you get on your fill and you just want to try the stuff that you've been taught, which is awesome. But the most important thing and the biggest thing that you can do for your patient is listen to them. Let them tell their story, and they need to tell it every time you see them, not just at the eval. So obviously you're coming in, you've seen what you do with the patient at the last visit, and you have a little bit of an agenda of maybe how you want to progress that patient. But if that patient comes in, when that patient comes in, you need to sit and you need to let them tell their story, even if it takes up, you know, 5-10 minutes of your treatment time. Because you want that patient to be able to trust you and feel comfortable with you and give up some of their control of themselves over to you. And so I think it's really important to be, if you can be a good listener, and then you can take that listening quality and translate that into some meaningful treatment, then you're going to have very, very happy patients, and you're going to have patients who will recommend you all over town.
That's a cool approach. I think I'm really understanding what you're saying, and they need to be part of the process. And if they're not explaining to you each time what's going on that you see them, then they start to feel more like you're doing to them. And I think that's the opposite of what physical therapy is. I think they need to be doing with you or it does not work. And if they aren't explaining to you why they're there each and every time, and if they don't think you're listening, they're not going to buy into what you're having them do either in front of you or after they leave, which is really, really important.
Of course. And, you know, Jason Silvernail, who's a physical therapist in the Army, and Diane Jacobs, who's a Canadian physiotherapist, wrote a great piece. It was the interactor versus the operator. And a lot of PTs tend to kind of take on that operator role where we're just operating on our patients instead of being the interactor, creating a mutual therapeutic relationship with the patient. So you want to be, because you want to empower that patient to be able to, because what if you're not around and they get a flare-up? Shouldn't they know how to deal with that to a certain extent on their own? I mean, I think so.
Absolutely.
And so you don't want to be the operator to your patient. You want to be the interactor. You want to be the partner. So it's not a, I'm going to mobilize you, do this, do that, and then let you go. Yes, you're going to mobilize someone because maybe they need it. And then you need to teach them how to manage and how to go out into the world on their own. So physical therapy is a mutual relationship. It's a partnership. It's not a, I'm going to fix you.
Right. All right, good scratching the surface of a good way to look at pain, especially for DPT students as we head out to our clinical affiliations. Going to take a quick break, be right back, and I want to get more into your practice in New York City because I think this is something not really gone over in PT programs in terms of educating students on how something like this can happen. So we're going to take a quick break and be back with Karen Litzy after this.
The PT Pinecast with McKay. The PT Pinecast proudly supports the Wounded Warrior Project. Since 2003, the Wounded Warrior Project has been raising funds and awareness for the needs of injured service members, helping injured servicemen and women with aid and assistance, and to provide unique direct programs and services to meet their needs. Their continuing goal is to foster the most successful, well-adjusted generation of wounded service members in our nation's history. To find out how you can help the Wounded Warrior Project, visit them online at woundedwarriorproject.org. Who says beer doesn't solve all problems? The PT Pinecast with McKay.
All right, we're back with Karen Litzy. You can follow her on Twitter at Karen Litzy, NYC. She also is the host of Healthy, Wealthy, and Smart. You can find that podcast on iTunes everywhere. She's done more than 150 episodes, all in the realm of PT, and she does a little bit of something different in New York City. So what's, I guess, called concierge PT. So explain to the students and everybody listening kind of what that is in a nutshell.
Sure. So as a concierge PT, I have a cash-based business, which I've had for about, 10 years or so. And I go to patients' homes or offices, and I treat them there instead of having them come to me. So okay. That's it in a nutshell.
But what's the difference between that and home care?
So, well, I don't take insurance, so I think that's one of the big things.
That's a big difference.
And the people that I see just prefer to have someone come to them. So they're willing to pay to have someone come to them. They're willing to pay for the convenience. And these are people who could easily go to an outpatient clinic. So they're not home bound.
Okay.
And so maybe that's a distinction. But they're just people who would rather have someone come to them.
So walk me through, I mean, how many clients are you able to see in a day? Because, of course, you've got to juggle their schedule. You've got to juggle your schedule. And you've got to juggle the schedule of everybody else in the Big Apple because traffic and commuting and getting anywhere is just a nightmare. So how many people are you seeing a day? How do you juggle that?
I will see anywhere from 5 to 8 people a day.
Wow. You can get around that much, huh?
So I live on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, kind of near Lincoln Center. So I may have 4 patients on Central Park West. So I will schedule them so that I have one on 90th, and then I'll have one on 84th, and I'll have 2 on 81st. hours. And so my commute time is just how quickly I can walk, which is usually like 5 minutes.
Right.
So I don't even need to schedule a half hour break between patients. I can schedule a 10 minute break or a 15 minute break.
And use that as the walk between.
Yeah. Yeah. So my sessions are an hour, and then I kind of like it because I see my patient for an hour and then I leave, I go for a walk, I can relax, I can clear my head, and then I can start to focus on the next person versus having like a rapid fire seeing 2, 3, 4 patients an hour. I see one person for an hour session, and some, I see a lot of kids. So for kids, it's usually a half an hour just because their attention span of a 9-year-old does not lend to an hour's worth of PT. But it's, and in New York, you'd be surprised. Some days, yeah, it can be a nightmare. But it's like, I think it's a lot easier for me to get around than it is for someone who maybe has to drive half an hour in between their patients, especially in like bad weather. So for me, I can just hop on a subway, hop on a bus, or most of the time I walk. So, I mean, I end up walking like 3 to 6 miles every day.
So you're getting your steps in with your Fitbit.
Yeah, I'm getting my 10,000 steps in.
As recommended by the American Heart Association. Good job. So is this in larger cities where the population base can support it? Is this where PT is going to go? Or I mean, is this where?
I mean, it's not for everyone, but if it's something that you want to do, I mean, I would encourage you to do it. Each market is a little different. You have to know your market. You have to know what the market will bear. And you have to know if you have the clientele. I personally sort of started slowly. So when I started 10 years ago, I still had a part-time job.
Mm-hmm.
So I was working part-time in a clinic and then seeing patients on the side. And so I just slowly built up my business until I felt like I had a good sustainable business, a good reputation, and I was getting new recommendations and referrals on a weekly basis. So, but I know some people who jump in feet first and just open a business and go for it. So I think it depends on your personality type and what you're comfortable with. And this is what I was comfortable with. And so that's how I sort of structured the beginning phases of my business.
As we might have a lot of students and new grads listening to the Pinecast, is this something that a new grad could pull off? Or do you recommend a couple of years working somewhere else?
Personally, I recommend a couple of years working with someone else. I know of new grads who are doing it, and more power to them. The only reason I say this is because whether you're doing a concierge model, going into people's homes, or you're opening up a standalone cash-based clinic, you probably do not have other PTs with you unless you've taken on a partner. And that's a whole other ball of wax.
Right.
But if you're a single PT and you're opening your own cash-based clinic, you are usually the person answering the phones, doing the scheduling, treating your patients, doing the paperwork, and doing all the business stuff. So it can be a little overwhelming if you're a new grad. And also, I think, I liked having other PTs around me when I first graduated so that I can learn from them and be mentored and be more confident in my skills. Because, you know, you can go and see someone, and if you don't know what's going on, it's perfectly okay to say to the patient, you know, I'm not really sure what's going on, but I'm going to look into it.
Right.
But what you can't do is say, you know, I don't know what's going on. Let me get Joe, the PT next door, to see if he can take a look at it.
Right.
I recommend having a couple of years under your belt. Number one, just to hone your diagnostic skills and your patient interaction skills. It's the way that you interact with your patients is ultimately what keeps them coming back. Of course, you're a good therapist and you're going to treat them to the best of your abilities and hopefully you're going to make them better. But good thing is that people will come back to you if you're nice, if you're nice to them, if you treat them well, if you're understanding, if you listen. So all of these other skills that I think you gain from being around other PTs and seeing how they work. And listen, I've worked for PTs who are horrible, but it's still a learning moment because now you know how not to treat your patients.
Sure. Yeah, I've heard that a lot, and I thought it was kind of a cop out. I thought it was kind of a just something professors said, and now I'm starting to say, okay, I get it. You're right. You know, I want to see perfect, and I want to see good, and I want to see all those things right in front of me. But the fact of the matter is, perfect and good, you know, rarely exists or never exists. But you know, a lot of great does, and a lot of bad does. And
sure,
to be able to recognize the bad from the good is a skill. So I think you bring up a great point.
Yeah, and it's super important. You know, like one of the first jobs I had in New York City was working for a woman who wasn't all that nice. She just wasn't nice. She wasn't nice to anybody. you know, least of all her patients, but she just wasn't very nice. And I always look back on that and think, oh my gosh, I would never treat people the way that she did. As a result, I think I've had a pretty successful practice, not just because of that one thing, but it was certainly a teaching moment for
me. Right. That's one thing you recognize, and I'm sure there were mm-hmm. others. I don't want to do this. And that's pretty much what makes up who someone is, a bunch of those individual decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why if you go straight out of school and just start working by yourself, you miss that.
You miss those, you know? Those experiences.
And it's important. It's important to have experience and be around different personality types and different people and know how to react to that. And also to see patients who might be complicated and you may not know what's going on. So it's great to have someone else there.
That's good advice. So healthy, wealthy, and smart. Karen Litzy, you can follow her on Twitter at Karen Litzy, NYC. She also is the host of Healthy, Wealthy, and Smart. You can find that podcast on iTunes everywhere. Well, cool. I'll let you get out of here, and I appreciate your time again, Karen. We'll talk again soon, okay?
Okay, sounds good. Thanks.
All right, bye.
The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that. The PT Pinecast with McKay.